Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. I'm going to start today's show by wishing my youngest daughter a happy fourth birthday. So happy birthday, Presley. I love you. She loves listening to Daddy on the radio for about the first minute, and then she gets pretty bored. Since our topic today is maternal mental health, it also seems appropriate to say thank you to my wife for bringing our three lovely daughters into this world and for being their comfort no matter what the storm. All right, I usually write a little something to start out the show, but today I'm just going to share a small passage I found on the website of today's special guest, Karen Kleinman. Women are rarely informed about the range of emotions that can develop after the birth of their baby. When they experience difficulty, they are often silenced by well-intentioned healthcare providers or family members with things like, all mothers experience this, or this is normal, or you'll feel better if you get out of the house, or find a hobby. This advice doesn't work. In fact, it can make her feel worse, misunderstood, and isolated. As her usual coping skills diminish, and her feelings of shame and guilt abound, her depression deepens. We live in a society that does not make it easy to admit that being a mother sometimes doesn't feel so good. Sometimes it's hard, it's exhausting, it's overwhelming, and it's just not always what we feel like doing. Also joining me today to discuss the issue of maternal mental health are Allison Coos Fox and Rachel Souther, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Mothering Wellness in Alaska. I want to thank both of you for coming in to the show today. I'm going to take a little bit of time. I'm going to have to ask you to sit back while I introduce my first guest. Karen Kleinman is a licensed clinical social worker, well known as an international expert on postpartum depression. Karen received her Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Indiana University and a master's degree in social work from the University of Illinois. In 1988, Karen founded the Postpartum Stress Center, a treatment and training facility for prenatal and postpartum depression and anxiety disorders. More recently, she founded the Postpartum Stress and Family Wellness Center in New Jersey. Karen has been interviewed by, featured in, and reviewed by just about every type of media outlet. Her national television appearances include The Katie Couric Show, Inside Edition, The Oprah Winfrey Show, and NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw. Some of her magazine credits include Fit Pregnancy, Parenting, Working Mother, Star, and Mothering Magazine. Karen is featured as an expert on psychologytoday.com, as a best voice in psychology, as the author of her blog, This Isn't What I Expected, Notes on Healing Postpartum Depression. In addition to her clinical work at the Postpartum Stress Center, Karen instructs postgraduate training courses for clinicians focused on treating women with postpartum depression and serves as a mentor for perinatal therapists. Karen has authored or co-authored a number of books on the subject of maternal mental health and postpartum depression and gives frequent lectures on the subject. She is currently involved in the development of a nonprofit foundation aimed at providing treatment services for disadvantaged women suffering from postpartum depression. Welcome to the show, Karen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Prentice. You think your daughter's still listening?
Probably just about done by now. She says, okay, let's play something else. Yeah, that was fun. That took a little while, but there was
a
lot to cover. It seems like you've been pretty busy. This is where I let people know how they can participate in the show. I would really encourage those with questions to send an email or call in early so we have time to get them on the air. We can be reached with your questions or comments in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And as always, the last way to participate is by emailing your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Karen, let's start by having you take a minute. Let us know a little bit about why you do what you do. It seems like mothering wellness and particularly postpartum stress is kind of your life's work.
Yeah, you know, I always try and think of a good soundbite for how this happened, 30 or so years ago is when I first had my first child, and there wasn't a lot out there. I did not have postpartum depression, but what happened then was I had a medical issue that sort of brought me from doctor to doctor with a newborn, you know. And so it was then that I really realized that the needs of a new mother sort of fall between the cracks because although my issue wasn't really related, I still had a new baby and I was sleep deprived and I was confused and I was scared. Wasn't sure really where to go. Didn't think this was a psychiatric issue. Didn't think my mother would completely understand. Didn't know if I should go to the pediatrician. Didn't know where to go. And so that's when the first time it hit me that postpartum women sort of have these unique needs that are that even to this day, they're not really sure which health care provider is the right place to go depending on what they're feeling and what they need. So we're all trying to create this community of, you know, more education and more awareness, and here are some places that you can go to get the support you need.
Well, it does seem like there's so many different contacts that mothers have with different professionals, you know, before and after baby's birth, and that could, like, who's really responsible for identifying that, and who's your main provider?
Right, and a lot of that depends on, you know, one of the things that we say is go to the provider that you feel most comfortable with, you know, and for some women it's her obstetrician, for some women it's her pediatrician and or her primary care physician and so forth, and that really, the relationship really can, you know, be the foundation of where it's going to go from there. But the problem really rests with the fact that so much of it overlaps. I mean, it's so much, you know, issues of what we call normal postpartum, you know, responses overlap with issues that might become problematic or pathological. Hence, you know, we should start talking about definitions. But, you know, there are normal changes with every new mother. All new moms are tired. All new moms are overwhelmed. All new moms are, you know, are excited and joyful and also anxious and so forth. And that's very common. And so a lot of healthcare providers will tell a mom who's way past the baby blues stage, you know, oh, you just had the baby blues, but it may not in fact be. So I'd be happy to help you differentiate that.
Well, that runs right into my next question, which is, what is postpartum depression? How common is it, and how does it differ from the baby blues? Because it does seem like stress, lack of sleep, being overwhelmed, getting thrown up on and pooped on and all those things really could contribute to people feeling stressed out and down.
Anybody feel bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So what you just described, you know, the biggest difference between the baby blues and postpartum depression are two things. The intensity, some of them can be the exact same feelings and experiences. The intensity is different with depression, and the timing is different. So the baby blues are all the things that you just mentioned, you know, feelings of sadness and moodiness and irritability and weepiness. And those, when they occur within the first 1 to 2 to 3 weeks, we call it baby blues. Anything beyond 3 weeks postpartum, we no longer call the blues. And so many, many well-informed but misinformed healthcare providers mistakenly say to 3, 4, 5 month postpartum women, oh, it's just the blues. But it's not, because the blues are hormonally triggered and those things sort of settle down after the first couple weeks. And if the symptoms persist beyond that, then we have to start, you know, looking closer and assessing for depression. Now, the quick answer, that was a long answer. The quick answer is postpartum depression is the presence of a clinical depression. It's the same thing as any other clinical depression unrelated to childbirth that occurs during the postpartum period. So in that way, they're exactly the same. But it occurs within the context of having a baby. So, you know, we also have to factor in sleep deprivation and hormonal changes and the transition to parenthood and as you said, so eloquently, being pooped on and thrown up upon.
So there is, I mean, it sounds like it really is like a major adjustment disorder, essentially, that if it doesn't resolve by 3 weeks out, then there's something that people should really be looking at a little more seriously.
Right. The adjustment disorder we sort of coined in our first book, This Isn't What I Expected, as postpartum stress syndrome. And that's something that does not, you know, meet the diagnostic criteria for a major depressive mood disorder. But it's somebody that you're describing, you know, somebody's overwhelmed and they're weary and they're tired and they need somebody to talk to and they need some support, but they don't need, let's say, medication, or they don't need aggressive therapy and so forth. And they may just get better with a wonderful support group and a wonderful support network and eating well and sleeping well and taking care of themselves. Once it meets diagnostic criteria, once somebody feels, you know, hopeless and despairing and may have suicidal thoughts and panic attacks and anxiety attacks that don't go away, and then we're talking about a depression that would need more attention than some good TLC. They would need some therapy and maybe meds.
Okay, you mentioned something that I did want to touch on. It's always sensationalized, the postpartum psychosis piece, and you mentioned psychosis and scary thoughts. So could you touch on those two things? Because my understanding with my limited knowledge and the research that I've been doing here for this show is that it's not a continuum, it's not a spectrum disorder, and psychosis is distinct and different than postpartum depression or anxiety.
Right. There's a lot of misinformation about this. And to be honest with you, Prentice, what's really disturbing is, you know, you could ask 10 different experts and you could get 10 different opinions, okay? So the truth is, you're right. It's not, one does not lead to the other. Baby blues does not lead to depression. Depression does not lead to psychosis. And if we see that in writing, it's actually misinformation. Psychosis is a distinct illness. And it is also hormonally triggered, and it also is defined within the first 2 to 3 weeks postpartum also. It's a very scary and somewhat rare, you know, 1 in 1,000 women have it, and it's characterized by symptoms of psychosis that can occur at any other time, like bizarre thinking and delusions and hallucinations and paranoid, okay, thoughts. What happens is that women with postpartum anxiety, which is very common, postpartum depression, we're going to call it the same thing. Postpartum depression includes postpartum anxiety. Postpartum depression is an umbrella term that we use to include several anxiety disorders, meaning panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, okay, OCD. They can all occur during the postpartum period. So postpartum depression is a very agitated depression, so there's a lot of anxiety, and women don't realize this. I don't feel depressed. I feel very anxious and agitated and nervous, and I'm worried all the time, and I'm looking at my baby all the time, and I'm checking to make sure she's breathing, and so it doesn't feel like depression. It can feel very scary, which is also why it's misdiagnosed. But back to your original question, the scary thoughts are very common. Scary thoughts are very scary. Scary thoughts are so common that statistics are as high as 91%, according to Abramowitz, John Abramowitz, who's a wonderful researcher in this area. 91% of all new moms, not moms with depression, all new moms experience negative, unwanted, intrusive, scary thoughts about harm coming to their babies. And 88% of all new dads experience this. Okay, that's how universal it is. That's how common it is. And women, when they have these scary thoughts, think there's something terribly wrong with them. What tells us that they are anxiety driven is that women feel so frightened by these thoughts. And so the psychological term that you know is these thoughts are ego dystonic. It doesn't feel like who I am. I would never want anything bad to happen to my baby. Oh, my God, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? When we see that anxiety attached to these scary thoughts, it confirms, again, that they're anxiety-driven. This is not the same thing as psychotic thoughts, because when a woman is having psychotic thoughts, her unreality becomes her reality, and she thinks it's real. Does that make sense? And it doesn't always make sense to those of us who aren't psychotic. Do you know what I mean? But when you're psychotic, if, for instance, if you're hearing a voice, if the devil tells you that your children will be safer if you dig a hole and put them under the ground, you think you're doing the right thing because in your frame of mind, it feels like your reality. But to those of us who aren't psychotic, it sounds horrific and terrible. So Basically, when a mom has scary thoughts and she has anxiety attached to those thoughts, that's actually a comforting sign to a healthcare provider because it tells us it's anxiety-driven. That was a long answer to your question.
Well, what's interesting about what you talked about, you mentioned the numbers of 91% and 88% of men. That makes it normal if it saturates the population at that rate.
Absolutely normal. Absolutely normal. Now, it's not... The nature of the thought isn't really what the problem is, okay? When it's a problem for us clinically, it's the level of her distress, okay? So she can have a terrible, terrible, terrible thought that she doesn't want to tell us. It's so horrific, it's so scary, she doesn't want to tell us, you know, about harm coming to the baby or her actually doing something to hurt the baby or something just god-awful happening. It's so hard to even talk about. She doesn't want to talk about it. We aren't concerned about that. We are concerned about how much is it interfering with her ability to function. How much is it interfering? How much is the distress interfering with her ability to get through the day? We want to treat her for her level of distress, not the nature of her thought. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and it also sounds like the problem is not necessarily the scary thought, but keeping that scary thought a secret and feeling like it's awful.
Exactly. And that brings us to shame, which is huge. And what happens, as you point out, when these stories get splashed again, you know, across the headlines, and the media sensationalizes these stories of terrible, terrible, sad, and tragic events with a woman who's psychotic, what happens is they think it's going to help educate people and get more women to reach out and get help. But in fact, it scares women. It scares women who are having scary thoughts, thinking, could that be me next? And so women actually shut down and are more silenced than actually come forward. So it can have a paradoxical effect.
Okay, well, I do want to get back to shame in just a second, but I want to remind listeners that our guest today is licensed clinical social worker Karen Kleiman from the Postpartum Stress Center in Pennsylvania. Our topic is maternal mental health. You can reach us with your questions at 550-8433. That's our local number. Or you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752 and email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so you mentioned shame and the stigma. And how do those impact, we've touched on a little bit, but a woman's willingness to disclose those problems, and like who should she talk to about that, and how does that impact them getting help and actually make it worse?
Yeah, I'd like to do this as fast as possible because I could go on and on and on forever about it. There's such a stigma about mental illness in general. You know what I mean? In our culture, and when we add a mom into that picture, it just gets bigger. And moms just don't. We live in a society that just doesn't make it easy to talk about how bad it can feel being a mom. And so, you know, there's so much pressure. There's so much pressure on the, you know, on TV, in at the playground, everybody seems to be doing it so well. Everybody's lost weight. Everybody's wearing spandex and lipstick, and they look great, and they're baby, and they're happy, and so women, you know, they shut down in isolation, and they don't talk about how they're feeling, and they think they will be judged, and they think they have failed as a mom, and they're afraid if they admit any of this that even their healthcare provider, you know, they'll call Child Protective Services, or somebody will do something terrible, and so. So postpartum women are incredibly good at looking really good. And so they go to their doctors looking really good. And they answer their question, you know, how are you doing? I'm fine. How's the baby? She's great. Everything okay? Yeah. And then they go home and they are having thoughts of killing themselves. Honestly, that's what happens. You know?
Yeah, and that...
And so I didn't answer some of your questions, but, and so, you know, we really need to treat this from both sides. You know, we need to educate the doctors to make sure they're asking the right questions, to make sure they're screening, to make sure even if a mom looks good, we still have to ask her these hard questions, like, are you having any thoughts that are scaring you? And then, of course, we need to empower mom that even if you're not asked these questions, to let the doctor know, and if you are asked these questions, to answer as genuinely as possible so you can get help. and there is help, and women get better, and they get better really well. They don't have to suffer as long as they do.
But if they don't get help, this lingers and lingers. And the numbers that I read are like 20% experience some kind of significant or clinical postpartum depression. If that's the case, how come things haven't changed over the years as we like come into this new modern age and with all our technology and the internet and all this stuff? Why is it still that stigma, which is part of why I'm on the radio doing what I'm doing, is because I want to sort of dispel that stigma about mental health. We all get it.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and it's a really good question that I wish I could answer, and I've been fighting it for 30 years, and I still can't answer it. But you know, we all know about the baby blues, and we all know about terrible, tragic, terrible things that happen with women who have psychosis. But we miss this whole middle ground of women, partly because they look good, partly because they are not talking about how bad they feel. And there's so much advocacy now, and part of what Rachel and Allison are doing is getting the word out and making sure women know there are safe places where they can go and talk about this and try and beat the shame down and the stigma down, so that women know that there really is help available and that they can talk about it. We were amazed when we revised our book 25 years later that not much has changed, that doctors still aren't asking those questions. They're afraid. They don't know what to do with mental health issues. There aren't always great places to send them, so they're afraid to sort of open that Pandora's box, you know?
Right. They don't want to have to deal with it themselves.
Well, right. OBs think, you know, you've had your baby, so we're done. And pediatricians, women are afraid to talk to their pediatricians because they want to really look good as the baby's mother. They're afraid of being judged as a bad mother. They go to their PCP, and sometimes they get Xanax because it's an agitated depression, but they're not really talking about the depression. They're just talking about how anxious they are. So there's still a great deal of misinformation out there, too.
It sounds like they should really begin the education about postpartum depression really early in the pregnancy and start to talk to women about that and what to look for and that it's okay, and then give them all a copy of your book, Dropping the Baby and Other Scary Thoughts, right? And then,
don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. And then I think it normalizes it. And if everybody, if people knew that this is just a part of the process, and I think when you have a new baby, that fear, at least for me, when I would wake up in the middle of the night as a dad and like have this panic, like she hasn't cried yet tonight. And I would run in there like thinking the worst, and then she's just sleeping peacefully. But it's the fear of the unbearable.
That's right. And that's right. And what you just described is what everybody feels, and what everybody, you know, and not everybody talks about, but everybody feels those intermittent moments of panic and and what if, the what ifs abound, and you don't always know it's normal unless you talk about it, unless you find out that everybody else down the street is feeling the same thing, you know, which is why it's so great that you're raising awareness in this show. I will mention to you, when you said that about pregnancy, that your next show, by the way, you know, about the same amount, 10-12% of women get clinically depressed and anxious during their pregnancy. So not only do we need to, you know, prepare them during pregnancy for the postpartum period, but some of them are also clinically depressed during their pregnancy, but those feelings overlap also with sort of pregnant changes, and not everybody identifies it as an illness that needs to be treated.
It sounds like you just volunteered for an hour show.
There you go. Time.
Maybe we can do this again. We are running out of time. Do you have a few more minutes here with us?
Yes, sure.
Okay. I want to read a quote that I read from a mothering blog, and I want to lead that into the next question, and you can just answer it real quickly, and then we'll get you out of here. But a woman wrote that, "I had no idea how touched out I would be at the end of the day. The constant holding, breastfeeding, cuddling, and touching my baby made me fantasize about being naked in a dark room with nothing, not even clothes, touching me. Not a good thing to be thinking about when your husband comes home from work." So how do these issues affect the marriage and the intimate partner relationship, and how should folks navigate? I mean, how should men approach this and talk to their spouses?
Well, you know, So it sounds like a plant, but, you know, now I have to shamelessly promote my newest book, which is Tokens of Affection, and that is exactly what the book is about, is how this depression affects your marriage. Because it does, and what happens is when women get treated and then they get better and now they feel better, then they look back and go, wait a minute, what's happening to my marriage? So think about it. I mean, it's pretty apparent that if one of the partners shuts down, and one of the partners, you know, it feels the way you just described it, the way this blogger described it so perfectly. I'm touched out. Don't get near me. You know, I've got milk coming. I've got, you know, out of every orifice of my body. Women are discharging. They're leaking. They're bleeding, you know. And if you don't want to be touched, it's hard on the marriage. So it's something that, you know, the quick answer is couples need to talk about this. They need to talk about it, and they need to dial down their expectations. I mean, honestly, you know, we are not surprised if couples tell us that the first postpartum year they don't have sex. We don't talk about sex for the first postpartum year. She needs to feel, but it doesn't mean that they can't have it. And if they do, that's wonderful. But it's not always the best time to pressure a woman into having sex. Being touched may be too much for her. So we're talking about conversations. We're talking about maintaining intimacy, listening to each other, talking to each other, sitting close to each other, holding each other's hands, spending time listening to each other. And those are the sexiest things you can do, right?
There's a lot of intimacy associated with sitting together and watching your baby sleep or holding your baby together and feeding. And so sex shouldn't be on dad's mind all the time is what you're saying.
Yeah, but that's another show we have to do. Yeah. Another whole show.
Yeah. And that doesn't have anything to do necessarily with babies, but
right.
Okay. I'm going to let you go cuz we're sort of out of time, but is there anything that you would like to leave us with or some parting thoughts
think about? I guess the best soundbite is this. You know, postpartum feelings are sometimes they're expressed as symptoms, but they are experienced as self. Okay, so when women say, you know, I feel scared, I feel hopeless, I feel out of control, these are symptoms. She thinks it's because she's a bad person. She thinks it's because she's a bad mom. When I hear a woman say those things, you know, that they can't focus and they have so much shame and guilt and feelings of failure, I hear her saying, I have these symptoms that I know we can treat. So I'm here to just say, don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't let the stigma get in the way. Seek help. Talk to somebody that you trust. You will feel better.
Okay. Well, thank you, Karen Kleiman, for taking the time to join us on Line One. Let's do talk about maybe getting a show sometime in the future. I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. I think it'd be fun. I'm so glad we did this, Prentice. Thank you so much.
Okay. You can find out more about Karen and the work she does on her website, postpartumstress.com, and you can see all of her books there. Check out her stuff. It's a lot of good information.
And can I say to Rachel and Allison, good luck to both of you and all your awesome work that you're doing, and I think it's fantastic.
Thank you so much, Karen. Okay. That means a lot.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Okay, we'll all be in touch. Prentice, thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye, Karen. All right, now we got just about a minute before break, so I'm going to go ahead and take advantage of that time to properly introduce my next guests who have been patiently sitting in studio and taking notes from Karen's wisdom. That was really great to have her on, so I appreciate y'all allowing her to sit in with us or phone in with us. So as a unique provider of both pediatric and women's health occupational therapy, Rachel Souther uses her scientific understanding of neurophysiology, psychosocial development, paired with analysis and activity of environment to empower each individual she treats to fully participate and be successful and satisfied in his or her self-selected occupation. Rachel holds a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and completed her master's degree at Colorado State University. She has pursued advanced education in many cognitive behavioral approaches. She is a DIR floor time practitioner, which I will have her explain after we come back because that's a new one to me, with advanced knowledge in the treatment of infant, child, and maternal mental health. seeing the impact of anxiety and depression on parents, in particular moms with children diagnosed with autism, FASD, or adaptive behavior challenges, led Rachel to pursue additional education in order to provide treatment to moms. In addition to providing treatment for maternal mental health challenges, she also provides therapy for pelvic floor dysfunctions, such as incontinence, with holistic pelvic care. Rachel and Allison joined together to found Mothering Wellness after attending a session on trauma titled When Survivors Give Birth at the 2013 Alaska Birth Conference. Rachel is a member of the American Occupational Therapy Association. She is registered through the National Board for Certification in Occupational Therapy. She practices in Anchorage and enjoys life with her husband and three children. Allison Coos Fox is a founding member of Mothering Wellness, a coalition of professionals and community members seeking to increase maternal mental health awareness and treatment options. She holds a bachelor's degree in creative writing from Beloit College and a master's degree in contemplative psychotherapy from Naropa University. I believe that's in Boulder, Colorado, correct?
It is, yeah.
Okay. Her training at Naropa prepared her to approach her work from a foundation in mindfulness practice and compassion. It also gave her a thorough appreciation of the power of group psychotherapy, in which she has pursued additional training. Allison has found that group psychotherapy can be a powerful tool in maternal mental health work because this treatment approach normalizes experiences and fosters community and supportive relationships. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier with the lack of like acceptance and people talking about it.
Yeah.
Allison has worked in organizations addressing intimate partner violence, psychiatric emergencies, and childhood abuse. Allison recently completed training in addressing the needs of trauma survivors during pregnancy and the perinatal period. She also completed an intensive training in acceptance and commitment therapy. Allison uses her therapy and mindfulness training every day in the care of her two young children. Thanks. I appreciate you both coming in today.
Thanks for having us on, Prentice.
Thank you.
You are listening to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email, as always, is line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell all that out. After this short break, we will dig deeper into the issue of maternal mental health in Alaska with our guests, Rachel Souther and Allison Coos Fox. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection from KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, I have in studio Allison Coos Fox and Rachel Souther, who co-founded Mothering Wellness in Alaska. If you're tuning in late, you missed our discussion with international expert and author Karen Kleiman. I would encourage you to tune in tonight at 9 or podcast the show to hear her portion of today's conversation. It was some really good information. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to bring you the latest health information on Line One 3 Mondays each month, and I will host a monthly show dedicated to mental and emotional health. I also want to remind our listeners you can podcast today's show and all of our Line One archives by visiting our website, alaskapublic.org, and clicking on the link to Line One. There you can browse through a wide range of really thoughtful and informative interviews on emotional and physical health. I sometimes just scroll through them and find I've listened to a lot of Dr. Woodard's shows, and they always have really valuable and reliable health information. So I would encourage folks to check that out. Remember, you can email questions and comments about today's topic to line one at alaskapublic.org. Call locally at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, if you are listening between 9 and 10 p.m. on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be accepting phone calls. Okay, Rachel, I did tell people that you would explain what DIR flooring is.
It's not flooring, it is floor time.
Oh, floor time, that's what it is. Okay,
yes,
I messed that up.
It's based on the work of Dr. Stanley Greenspan, and it takes a look at a child's developmental level, their individual differences, and the relationship between the child and parents or child care provider. It's one of the promising practices for autism. It's a very effective approach for treating children with a variety of spectrum disorders, not just autism.
I had not heard of that mm-hmm. ever, so that sounds unique. It's really the interactions between the child and their environment, including their parents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's important with this topic.
Absolutely.
Okay, so either one of you can start here. I'm going to open it up with, really, I want to know, like, what is this this thing you're involved in, and what kind of message are you trying to get out there? Give us a little bit of an idea about the background of this.
So Alice and I met at the Alaska Birth Conference last September, and were approached by a variety of midwives and doulas just expressing a lot of concern over mental health issues that they see with women as they're giving birth and in the pregnancy process. I got in touch with Allison in January and said, hey, let's do something for May, Maternal Mental Health Awareness Month. And what rose out of that was Mothering Wellness in Alaska. And we've partnered with other practitioners and are trying to increase awareness and screening of women, and also to provide hopefully some training opportunities to providers in our community so there's more resources for women to get help once they are identified.
Is there who else are you kind of partnering with or getting involved with and trying to draw this in or draw in? Like, it sort of sounds like a collaborative sort of approach.
Absolutely.
Yes, we've really tried to create a collaboration and figure out what's going on in the community and what we already have and what we might need to develop. We're partnering with Alaska Birth Network, and they are an organization here in town that does a lot of, they have a website you can look at. They do a lot of work with pregnant women and new moms. There's also, we've partnered with the Alaska Infant Mental Health Association, and we recently met with the Alaska Department of Public Health Division of Women and Family Health. So we're trying to get a pretty broad picture of what's going on here in Anchorage and see what kind of connections we can make.
It sounds like the main mission then would be raise awareness and educate professionals and physicians and about this specific issue. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think also to connect people who are already doing this work to each other and make sure they know about each other.
Have you found there's a lot of people out there sort of in isolation working on this issue, but not really cooperatively?
I don't know if I would say a lot, but we've found a few that could possibly work together, including ourselves. We want to work with some of the other programs in town.
All right, so before, like, what Karen was talking about was postpartum depression, maternal mental health. You guys, maternal mental health seems to be kind of the catchphrase for a whole bunch of different things. And how do you guys, Rachel, how do you define, like, maternal mental health for the purposes of what you guys are trying to accomplish?
Oh, it's a really nebulous topic. I think the best way to describe it is a woman's beliefs and her behaviors and how they contribute to her self-image. And as a woman goes through pregnancy and gives birth, there are some major changes in her role. She's assuming a new role as mom. And if she doesn't have a really positive self-image or has other challenges that impact her ability to engage in this new role, she's more likely to experience a challenge with her mental health. Allison has a wonderful definition. From who? From the World Health?
Yeah, from the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization defines maternal mental health as a state of well-being in which a mother realizes her own abilities, can cope with the normal stresses of life, and work productively and fruitfully, and is able to make a contribution to her community.
I did read on the WHO website it is a significant problem throughout the world. This is not just, especially in underdeveloped countries where the resources aren't available and people are living in poverty and have a lot of stressors.
Absolutely.
I guess we think globally, act locally at this point. So I appreciate what you guys are doing. You touched on something, the risk factors. Can we go over the risk factors because I understand it can happen and affect anybody in any socioeconomic class and from any race or any background, but there are risk factors that may predispose or increase the likelihood that a woman will experience some significant postpartum depression or anxiety. So can we kind of go over those risk factors and things that people should be aware of?
Sure. So if there's a previous history or predisposition to depression, if a woman experiences PMS, premenstrual distress disorder, more than just PMS, stressful events during the pregnancy, difficulty with the marriage, if she has experienced any sort of loss in job, employment, loss in social support, if the child was unwanted or unplanned, a history of a cesarean birth, history of infertility or fertility treatments, if there is an illness or a disability with the infant, isolation from family and friends, poor match in temperament between the mother and the child, low socioeconomic status or financial difficulties, and also thyroid problems are just some of the risk factors.
That's a significant list. Mm-hmm. What about, can one of you speak to the, if the relationship, the bond between partners, or if a woman is single. My understanding is that if there's not a supportive partner at home, that increases the likelihood significantly. If there's domestic violence, you may have mentioned that and I missed it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a very big contributing factor to a woman's mental health.
It seems like domestic violence and I mean, obviously that creates an environment that makes it very difficult for bonding and nurturing and things like that. So, all right. Can we talk briefly about some of the additional risk factors that might be unique to Alaska? Because we as a state have, we have higher incidences of depression, we have higher incidences of substance abuse, we have higher incidences of several mental health disorders. So, are there specific risk factors unique to Alaska that increase the likelihood of postpartum depression or anxiety disorders?
Well, the seasonal affective disorder, the long winters are very stressful, as long as the long days. Sleep patterns are often very impacted with a new baby, and even as we enter into toddlerhood and getting kids to sleep, that also plays in with moms being stressed. Other risk factors is many people up here come here through the military, and they're removed from their social support systems. We also have all of the increase in mental health disorders, and abuse is more common up here than other places. Kind of the general number for the American population is estimated to be around 20%.
Okay.
For Alaska, I think it's 26% for the non-Native community and 30% for the Native community, and that's from some state research. The PRAMS data, it's a pregnancy risk assessment monitoring system. They've been collecting data since 1990, and those seem to be the most accurate numbers, though not they're not the most current. But we're significantly higher than the national average.
Wow, 30%.
30%. And that's for the Native population, and that's only considering live births, so that's not considering moms that have experienced pregnancy loss. That's not considering abortion or miscarriage, stillbirth.
Oh, right. So these numbers don't take into account pregnancies that didn't go to term.
Exactly.
Which I would imagine pregnancies that didn't go to term would have an incredibly high rate of...
Mm-hmm. Or they did go to term and the baby didn't survive. Yeah, right. Wasn't a live birth, yeah.
Speaking of the risk factor, or those high numbers, what are some of the difficulties that you guys have found in looking around and talking to folks about the difficulty of delivering services to some of the more remote areas of our state? I mean, we have a lot of difficulty, like, with any sort of mental health services or health care services, for that matter. What are some of the challenges that you guys are finding as you're trying to reach out into more of these rural communities?
We haven't been able to reach out much further than Anchorage yet. I am aware of some training that's happening up in Fairbanks this week and next week. The infant learning program is brought up a speaker, Elizabeth O'Brien. And she'll be conducting training for the next 2 weeks up there. That's the only thing I know as far as education up there. I know there's a lot of barriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the plain fact of how remote it is makes it very difficult.
It's difficult, and there's not a lot of, like, physicians in rural villages. I guess they have, like, village health aid, and I would imagine it's difficult if our physicians are not doing, like, locally are not doing a great job. And I don't want to encompass everybody in that, obviously, because there's a lot of folks that are doing this well. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine for people who are not highly trained and not highly skilled in this area, it would be difficult for them to identify.
Yeah. I mean, if you're the only healthcare provider for miles around, it's going to be difficult to meet everyone's needs.
Okay, I read somewhere about the suicide risk for postpartum depression. Do you guys have some numbers on that and why that's so important to assess?
Yeah, it is very important to assess, and mostly because I was really surprised when I started looking into it and at how high the numbers were. Some studies put the suicide rate, and this is successful suicides, at 20% of all maternal death. So I found a study from the National Institute of Health that found both pregnancy-related suicide and pregnancy-related homicide, which is related to your comments about domestic violence earlier.
Right.
Individually, those are both higher than many other more common obstetric complications, which we think of when we think of maternal death, like hemorrhage or embolism or preeclampsia, eclampsia. So individually, maternal suicide has a higher rate of death than, say, hemorrhage.
So I imagine combined, those two things, suicide and homicide, are really high up. And nobody ever thinks about that as being a risk of pregnancy.
Right. Yeah, it's very serious and very concerning.
And that's why it's so important, I think, to catch this stuff early, so it doesn't get to that, and to identify women in difficult relationships.
Yeah.
That's why the screening process is so important to be happening prenatally, during the prenatal visits. The postpartum depression screening should be conducted at least every trimester. And if a woman is identified as being high risk, it needs to be something that's addressed during every visit.
Well, that leads right into one of my next questions, is who's doing this screening, and what should women expect when they go see their doctors as far as, like, screening for postpartum? Who's doing it? Who's responsible for it? As I mentioned to Karen, like, there's so many different people that have access and are seeing these women over the course of, you know, this 9 months of pregnancy and post-pregnancy. Like, who's responsible for really identifying this stuff and educating people?
I'd like to say our whole community is responsible. it's such an important factor. Usually it's birth professionals, your midwives and doctors, OBs, that have taken on the postpartum screening. So they're typically done at 6 weeks postpartum. I think there's pretty good compliance with that standard. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten a good sense of how much it's happening during pregnancy, and care for women ends at 6 weeks postpartum unless there's complications. then she's not seen again until 1 year later for her annual exam. So that's a lot of time passing. So that's where we really need to get pediatricians involved. And any professional that has contact with a mom with young children needs to be ready with the screen. The Edinburgh is free. It's available online. It's a 10 question.
Is there, you guys talked off the air about the evidence that postpartum can happen anywhere up to 2 years post-birth, mm-hmm. postpartum depression. So at 6 weeks, it seems like you're missing a lot if the pediatricians are not following up.
Yes, I think that's very true. I mean, after birth, anyone's, you know, sort of rate of contact with professionals kind of drops off because you don't have your monthly visit to your prenatal care provider.
And as Karen pointed out, the importance of people really asking the question about how they're doing, because a new mom is not going to roll into her doctor's office straight out of bed with her hair messed up. She's going to take maybe her first shower in 2 weeks if she's really mm-hmm. depressed, right? And so it seems super imperative that no matter how good she looks and no matter how well she presents, that providers, healthcare providers and family members and friends really be aware and ask the questions.
I think, and also know where you would send them if there was a problem, which is what we're trying to help with. Let people know where ladies can go.
So that's a great question. It's not on my list, but if a woman has a concern or if a family member has a concern, how should that be addressed? How should a family member or friend address it with a woman? Because it could be a really sensitive topic. And then where should they go for help? How can you just go see any mental health provider like me? Or can you go see any, like, does it have to be a post, someone specialized and trained in that?
I don't think it has to be. I mean, I think the important thing is that you, when you're looking for a healthcare provider, that you find someone that's comfortable for you. One strategy is to kind of get those things in place before there's a problem. Some women start seeing a therapist during their pregnancy just as an extra support service. Not everyone can do that, but it's an option. In terms of how someone should, if they see a mom that they think might be struggling and how someone can address that, one thing would be to learn the symptoms. Listening to Karen earlier was a really helpful way to kind of get a clearer idea of maybe this isn't just the baby blues. It's been going on, you're 2 months postpartum, I'm concerned. Tell her gently about your concerns and focus on what you've noticed, not necessarily reading into it, but I see, you know, you haven't been sleeping. I'm concerned because you don't seem like yourself. And start working with her right away to get her help. Don't kind of put it off. And if she's really reluctant, maybe set some wellness goals and action steps to achieve them. Set some goals about, you know, self-care and some steps and how you can support her in that. And with a time limit that if, you know, things aren't improving for her, maybe after 2 weeks, you'll have that conversation again about seeing a healthcare professional.
I really like the idea about somebody getting involved with a therapist or somebody as sort of a precautionary or preventative. It's like going to your doctor for preventative care. You go, this is a high risk time. If 20% or 26% locally, that's 1 in 4. That's a big number. Mm-hmm. So if my chances were 1 in 4 that I was going to get some significant mental health problem due to being pregnant, although that wouldn't be for me, but yeah, you get my mm-hmm. point. I really like that idea of getting out and getting some preventative care for that.
And Prentice, another thing to remember is the current concern really extends beyond the postpartum year or two. There was a recent research study that stated that women are at more risk for a mental health crisis or challenge 4 years after the birth of her child than she is at any time during the first year. So, and then the PRAMS data also found that I think it's something close to like 20% of women are still reporting depressed symptoms 2 years after the birth of their child. So it's before and after. There's additional need for support, whether that just comes through her community or getting into support groups or getting individualized counseling or therapy. It's very important to that we all wrap around young families.
Is screening a regular part of every woman's like prenatal care? Do you know?
It was not my experience.
No.
Okay. It was not my experience.
So that's one thing that you folks are trying to raise awareness of and and get out there. It seems like it should be part of the packet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, it should.
All right. What about, we just have another, just a little bit of time left. This went fast, but, what about, I read about postpartum depression, anxiety in men. And Karen mentioned that. Is that, she mentioned 88% have some sort of feelings or some sort of adjustment problems, but is that an actual diagnosis in men? And can men suffer from prolonged postpartum depression?
Yeah, men can certainly experience postpartum depression. I don't think it's an official diagnosis, but it can be kind of put under the adjustment disorder. But there is a lot of co-occurrence, especially if their partner is depressed. That puts them at a much higher risk of experiencing depression. A lot of times one partner gets better, the other then kind of falls apart. And men's depression can be triggered similarly to women's by their hormonal changes as their partner goes through their pregnancy. Men's hormones actually change. Their testosterone drops, their estrogen rises, and that can sort of set off a depressive episode sometimes.
Okay. Rachel, any parting thoughts, any last words for folks?
I guess I would just really encourage women and families to reach out for help. Let's get a discussion going in our community to normalize this, because just it's so common. It is such a common experience.
Allison?
Well, we didn't get to the section talking about women and their meds, which I think is a big issue. And I wanted to just mention that kind of the best way to deal with it if you're taking medication is to have a preconception discussion with your provider and talk about the meds you're taking and what would happen if you did get pregnant, intentionally or unintentionally.
That is the next show. All right. My thanks to today's guest, Allison Coos Fox and Rachel Souther from Mothering Wellness in Alaska. I also want to thank Karen Kleiman for joining us from Pennsylvania for the first half of the show. If you would like to continue today's conversation, join KSK on Facebook. You can find the link on our website, alaskapublic.org, and you can let us know your thoughts about today's show at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. I guess the thing I want to people to remember is that if the new mother in your life is struggling with this difficult challenge, there's no better tonic than the understanding and support you can provide. As difficult as this can be for her, it is exponentially worse if she feels isolated and ashamed of her feelings and thoughts, or is made to feel like she is just not trying hard enough, or is somehow to blame. I'll leave you with this quote from an unknown author that kept showing up during my research for this topic. "The girl who seemed unbreakable broke. The girl who seemed so strong crumbled. The girl who always laughed cried. The girl who never stopped trying finally gave up. She dropped her fake smile as a tear rolled down her cheek and whispered to herself, 'I can't do this anymore.' That's postpartum depression." On the next Line One, Dr. Woodard will be joined by Dr. Ben Wesley and Dr. Jeff Demain. Their topic will be the immune system, and in particular, its response to infections. So why not tune in and learn more Monday, June 16th at 2 p.m., repeating that same evening at 9 on FM 91.1 KSK Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. For my guests and all the people who made today's show possible, thanks for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.